doing well. I hope you had as good a day yesterday as I did. Now, each time in the past when it's been my opportunity to speak before you all, I had a topic in mind months before it was actually my turn. A topic that I couldn't get out of my head. It kept coming up over and over and over. Just every time, I knew exactly what I was going to do. And this time, I couldn't nail down the topic at all. I'd get an idea, and it'd go away. I'd think about something, and then it'd go away. As most of you know, Elisa is in charge of the Women of Hope Conference that was this past weekend, or yesterday, on Friday. And JJ had to help her do filming, so he wasn't available. Judy went to the conference, so Jim and I had the privilege of keeping JJ. Now, Judy gets this privilege several times a week. She gets to do it all day long on Tuesdays. He hops up in the morning and says, "Grandma, Tuesday!" You know, he wakes up, he's excited. Now, I don't get that opportunity as often. So for me, it was a big deal. I mean, this is going to be great. One or two things that I noticed, though, were it's amazing how much time is consumed when you have to keep up with a 2.5-year-old. See, I'm not used to this. I'm used to being at work, and I can tell people, this needs to be done, go do that, I'll be back in a little bit, you know, it's done. Doesn't work that way with 2.5-year-old for some reason. So I found out there were many things about that age that just fascinated me. How they're entertained by just the littlest things. He's on a kick right now. He wants to play with the toys in the sink in the bathroom. As many toys as can fit in the sink is not enough. It has to be full of water and to the top with toys. And then you must put soap on them. Okay, so now you can picture what's happening in the bathroom, right? The water is on Jake, on the toys, everywhere. There's soap on the toys, there's soap on the countertop, there's soap on him, there's soap on us. And he could do it for hours. When they like something, they don't want anything else. They get fixated on something, right? When our boys grew up, it was Barney, but it was, you know, oh, I hated that song. It would play over and over and over. I mean, now they'll play a particular DVD until the player stops. I mean, like, breaks, right? They just get fixated on something, they just won't stop. And they require, no, they demand your attention. Right? It's not good enough for them to play in the same room. It's not good enough that they can see you in the room. You have to be right there with them. And they're going to be noticed. How many of you remember Chris Lean singing a couple times back? He tried his hardest to ignore Xander, who was going, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy." And Chris was just up here like, "I'm just going to ignore it and go away." He got louder. He got louder. Because once they get something in their mind, they're going to go after it with everything they have. And yet, they're so easily distracted. I noticed yesterday, Jacob said, "I want to play this puzzle." Before I could get it off the shelf, he was doing something else. I want to watch this video. Time to get it loaded up, he's off doing something else. It doesn't take anything at all to distract them. And yet they're so brutally honest. Which is good and bad, right? You ask them anything and they'll tell you exactly what they think. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes you did not want that answer. But they are honest as can be. And they are inquisitive. Oh my goodness. How many of you ever raised kids? What's the biggest question you've always heard?
Why?
Why? Yeah, exactly.
Are we there yet?
Oh, that's the second question. Since we didn't leave the house, that question was impossible. But they'll ask a question about everything. If they don't understand it, it's why. Jake has a set at a racetrack.
It has three cars that were supposed to go with it. The intent was the cars would sit at the starting line. When you push the button, the cars would go around the track a couple times and get to the finish line and stop.
Well, they no longer do that. They go about halfway around the track, if they're lucky, and stop.
So, being the good engineer that I am, I opened them up to see what's wrong. Well, there's two switches and a control board that sets the timer for the motor. It's like, oh great, there's no way to fix this. It's a printed circuit board. So, he's asking, what's wrong with the cars? They're broke. So what's wrong with them? They don't work. Why don't they work? Because they're broke. Why are they broke? Because they don't work. This could have gone on all day. And as you can tell, they're persistent. They will continue. They will not stop. They don't even know they're doing it. I mean, with us, we know we're doing it. I'm going to badger you because I enjoy it. Particularly Jeff. Because I know any opportunity he's going to do the same. So I have to get in every opportunity I can. With them, it's just a natural thing. And it's amazing how quickly they learn to get your attention. I was so shocked. At the age of 2.5, he's already learned how to roll his eyes, how his lips go, where does that come from? He can manipulate me around anything he wants. And I'll do it. And Jim's standing going, wait a minute, you wouldn't do that for me. And I think back, and the same thing happened with JJ. When we grew up, we were not allowed to throw a ball in the house. The number one rule Dad would not say, I don't care where you play, but you cannot throw a ball in the house. Well, one day, JJ was staying at Mom and Dad's house. He was about 4. I walk in, and in the living room, they're throwing a baseball. Back and forth, Dad and JJ throw a ball. So, whoa, time out. Don't throw a ball in the house. Dad said, oh, no, it's different. He can throw it. Oh, like we're a bunch of those. No, he's accurate. Oh, so we weren't. So what's the deal? How come it's different? Well, he just said it's different. And at the time, I thought, oh, I don't get that at all. Now I do. It's amazing how much smarter Jake is than they were. And he can get excited about almost anything. If you know how to, you can get him so excited. Judy can get him excited about a nap. It's a matter of how you say it and how you react to it. If you say, let's go take a nap, it's no way. Somehow she can get him to where he runs to the room to take a nap. It's all a matter of perspective and how they perceive it, right? It's fun if you make it look like it's fun. She can get him to eat broccoli. She could probably get him to eat stuff I won't eat. I know that because I've seen it happen. And as the day went on, I realized that my sermon topic was sitting in front of me all along. I needed a topic that I could embrace. And God placed him right in my lap. Because it reminded me a lot of the verses we read in Matthew 7, verses 7 through 11. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, the one who knocks it will be opened. Or which one of you, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask of him? I think it's a very strong reason Jesus used a reference to a son.
asking for something. Because all of us who have children can relate to that so much. We want so much for our kids to have anything that their little hearts desire that we'll do anything for it. And he says, if we, being evil, will do this for our children, how much more will our Heavenly Father give us? How much more ability he has to give to us? How much more understanding of our needs does he have than we have? Most frustrating thing with a 2.5-year-old is trying to figure out what he wants. He can talk well enough, but it's hard for him to explain what it is he wants. The harder the concept, the harder it is, and he'll just get frustrated trying to explain it to me because I'm not sharp enough to pick it up. He knows what he wants. I can't figure it out. We don't have that problem with our Father, do we? He knows what we want before we know what we want. Because we, like our children, have those traits of persistent, continuous, incessant need. Right? We ask these things from our Father. And can we truly say that we pray the way children ask for? There's a commercial on TV right now. Got on my nerves the first time I saw it. And the more I think about it, the more true it really is. This kid with his mom, grocery store. He said, can I have a snack? And the next 35 seconds of this whole commercial, all you hear is this kid going, please! And he goes past an aisle and you see him on the front of the car. It's quiet and please, and he passes the aisle and stops. The next aisle, you see the kids say the same thing, please. And they finally get to some product. The mom looked at, says, oh, this is good. Hands it to him. He's going, please, 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 please. And she hands it to him. He goes, thanks, mom. Runs away. It's like the world was about to end until he got what he wanted. Do we pray that way with God? We are God's children, and he wants the best for us. And we, being evil, not perfect, will do good. How much more does God want to do good for us if we ask? Do we ask? Let's flip to Luke chapter 11, verses 5 through 8. Now, if you look in verse 1, it said Jesus praying in a certain place. And when he was finished, his disciples said, Lord, teach us to pray. And he does what you all know is called the Lord's Prayer. Teach us to pray. And we think that's where the teaching stops. I would venture to say the teaching had just begun. Because let's look at the next couple verses. Verses 5 through 8. And he said to her, which of you who has a friend will go to him at midnight and say to him, friend, lend me 3 loaves, for a friend of mine has arrived on a journey, and I have nothing to set before him. And he will answer from within, do not bother me, the door is now shut, my children are in bed with me, I cannot get up and give you anything. And I tell you, though he will not get up to give him anything because he is a friend, yet because of his impudence, he will rise and give him whatever he needs. First, the disciples say, Lord, teach us to pray. And he gives them this beautiful prayer. And he rolls right into this parable of the man who had a friend come to visit. He didn't have any food, so we went next door. It's midnight. I don't know about you, but I don't answer the door at midnight.
Okay. If you didn't hear my wife, because I didn't hear it. I didn't answer the door. I didn't get up and get crying on you. I don't hear it. Once I go to sleep, we're done. Had I woke up in the middle of the night and somebody woke me up, I would have not entered the door because they woke me up. I would not have given them something to eat. I would tell them, come back tomorrow. And yet he says he got it because of his insistent asking. We look at that and we don't put that together with the Lord's Prayer, but the two are hand in hand. Flip over to Luke chapter 18. Verses 1 through 8. And he told them a parable to the effect that they ought to always pray and not lose heart. And he said, in a certain city there was a judge who neither feared God nor respected man. And there was a widow in that city who kept coming to him and saying, give me justice against my adversary. For a while he refused. But afterward he said to himself, though I neither fear God nor respect man, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will give her justice, that she will not beat down. She will not beat me down by her continual coming. And the Lord said, hear what the unrighteous judge says. And will not God give justice to his elect who cry out to him at night? And will he not? And will he delay long over them? I tell you, he will give justice to them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? Notice both of these were at times Jesus was teaching his disciples to pray. The last verse says that there will be justice. But he ended it with, will there be any faithful found? The diligence of what those little children do constantly when they ask is they don't give up, do they? Until they get what they're asking for, they don't want to stop. I think often we ask, we don't get an immediate answer, so we quit. The answer is not quick in coming, so we think the answer is no. One of the other things while I was playing with Jake was Jesus' comment in Matthew 19. Matthew 19, 13 through 14. Disciples rebuked the people. But Jesus said to them, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. And he laid his hands on them and they went away. Why would the disciples say, don't bring the children to Jesus? There's so many people that are coming all along that he's healing, that he's teaching, that those little kids are just getting in the way, right? I could hear the disciples. Who would be the first in line, right? Who's usually the first to speak up on any occasion? Peter, right? I could just picture him. Get those little kids out of the way. And while he's doing that, Jesus says, well, no, wait. You don't understand. Don't stop them, because this is the kingdom. Flip back to Matthew 18, verse 1 through 6. We'll spend quite a bit of time now in Matthew 18, so if you find it, just stay there. The first six verses are when I want to start, but really in verse 1 it says, at that time the disciples came to Jesus saying, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Question asked. So the rest of this chapter is a response to that question. So pay attention to the question to know what the answers are. Because what's he immediately do? And calling to him a child, he puts him in the midst of them and said, "Truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives such a child in my name receives me, but whoever causes one of these little ones to believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and be drowned in the depth of the sea." The question is, who is the greatest in the kingdom? Now, these are the disciples, right? We always think they're a really good bunch of guys that never have any discussions, right? Like we do. In another place, we see that John, his mother, came and brought the two brothers and put them, "Can one sit on the right and one sit on the left?" And Jesus said, "You don't know what you're asking for." In this case, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus brought a child and said, "Unless you become like this child, you won't be able to enter the kingdom of heaven." He continues in the next verse, "Woe to the world for the temptation to sin. For it is necessary that the temptations come, but woe to the one by whom temptation comes. And if your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life crippled and lame with two hands or two feet to be thrown into the eternal fire. But if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out, throw it away. For it is better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes to be thrown into eternal hellfire." This seems really excessive to us, doesn't it? We don't really believe in anything enough that we are willing to cut off our hand for it, do we? Be honest with yourself. I still have two. Jesus said, if you want to be the greatest in the kingdom, be like this little child. And woe to you if you have temptation for anything that gets in your way to stop you from doing that, get rid of it. Whether it's a hand, whether it's a foot, whether it's your eye. Whatever it is. Now remember, it was prompted by the question. He continues in verse 10. "See that you do not despise one of these little ones. For I tell you that in heaven, their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven. What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep, and one of them goes astray, does he not leave the 99 in the mountain and go and search the one that went away? And if he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than the 99 that went astray. So it is not the will of my Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish." Each one is important to God. Each little one, he says here. So much so that he would leave the ones he already has to go search for the one that's not there. He knows it's missing because he knows them all by name. How many of you parents have lost a child ever? Just don't know where they are? Do you enjoy that feeling, Papa? No? I experienced this at a young age, not having lost my child, as in having been in the car when Dad lost one. We went with another family. We 20 miles from home to a little park. We got out, there was a playground, so all the kids got out. There were six of us in the car. Got out to play. The parents just sat on the bench for a while, and we all got in the car and went to another part of the park. Thankfully, the park had a circular road, because we came back out the entrance to leave the park, and standing on the little hillside next to the playground, there's this little blonde-haired little boy just smiling and waving, and Mom's
friend looked at her and said, "That looks just like your son."
And it was Mike. We had left him for an hour in the playground, just drove off. So many kids, and actually, the guy we were with, who had four girls, looked at my dad and said, "So, you got so many of them you don't even want one." And that's not the case at all. They just, once they realize it, they panic, right? So it's exactly the same way with God. When He knows we're not there, what's He going to do? He's going searching for us. Jim was never lost. He couldn't be quiet long enough to be lost. He wanted to be lost, but he would giggle wherever he went. You would take him to a store, and he would hide in the circular clothes racks. Easy to find, because the clothes are legal. You could never be lost.
I did leave him at Walmart once.
Yeah. And was he lost, or were you lost? Because he knew exactly where he was. Just the rest of you didn't know where he was. As I recall that story, he was the most responsible one of the bunch. Well, that was Adam's fault. I hear that. Right. Not only is it that each one is important to God, he will leave the 99 and go look for the one. He also continues in the same set of verses to talk about the individual. Starting in verse 15, "If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. And if he listens to you, you have gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. And if he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen to even the church, let him be to you as a Gentile, a tax collector. Truly I say to you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you lose in earth will be loosed in heaven. Again I say to you, if two of you agree on earth about anything they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. Where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am among you." That verse is misquoted so often as saying, worship, where two or three are gathered in my name. What he actually said was, response to the question in verse 1, which was, who is the greatest in the kingdom? He's continuing the same answer that says, the greatest in the kingdom is the one that is willing to put down his personal thoughts, feelings, and desires, and go off to the one that he feels offended by to say, I love you enough that I am willing to put myself on the line to do whatever is necessary to make sure that you and I are not in disagreement. Whatever two or three agree to on earth, that will be in heaven. No, on the proof text days, right? Misquoted, misused, taken out of context. Context is, are you trying to reconcile? Because the other thing we use that verse for is discipline, right? They're wrong, so we're going to go and tell them they're wrong. So what it says if they are wrong, your job is to go help them to come back. Only when they totally refuse are you allowed to leave them out. You don't go with the idea that they're not going to agree with me to start with. We already have preconceived notions on most things we do, don't we? If I ask you a question, you already have an answer in your mind before it, most of the time. Who's going to win the football game today? Most of you don't care, so it doesn't matter. Personally, I don't care. One way or the other. Don't care if there is a football game today. Now, if the Bears were playing, I had an answer, so they're not. So I can be totally impartial, except that one coach did play for the Bears, and, I guess I got to choose him. But it's often we are already fixed in our mind. We have preconceived notions. We know what we want to do. Peter, never being one to disappoint, asked the question. Right? Jesus' answer to this whole series of questions, or that one question with a series of answers already. So Peter, trying to get to the point, said, "Lord, how often, if my brother sins against me, can I forgive him? 7 times? Peter thought he was being really generous. The law said 3. So Peter said, "Hey, I'm going to do 7, right? How many times should I forgive my brother, Lord? 7? Thinking he's generous. Now, Jesus responds with what I believe is one of those truly childlike mannerisms. He said, "No. 7 times 7. 70 times 7. And that's not 490 or 491. Forget. What he's saying is, you don't stop, right? Well, I'm big, big numbers. Because most little kids, if you told them what 70 times 7 is, it's such a big number they would never keep up with it. Besides, if you tried to forgive somebody 490 times in one day, take out the time you're sleeping, how often have they offended you? Try it. Every 2.5 minutes. I know JD's forgiven me that many times in a day, but there are many other people that I offend that often. And I know there are none of them that would put up with me, so. He continues in chapter 18 to finalize this whole discussion. He said, "Therefore the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle his accounts with his servants. And when he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, the master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had so that payment could be made. So the servant fell on his knees imploring, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you everything.' Now, if you're not familiar with the talent, 10,000 talents was roughly what they would make in 10,000 lifetimes. Right? So the man saying, "I'll pay you everything," was roughly the same as saying, "I'm going to pay off the national debt." It's not going to happen in my lifetime, his kid's lifetime. It's not going to happen. But the man said, "Patience with me. I'll do it." Unless he was going to go rob a small country, it wasn't going to happen. But out of pity for him, the master of the servant released him and forgave the debt. And that same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii, roughly 100 days' pay, a third of a year, and seized him and began to choke him, saying, "Pay what you owe." And his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, "Have patience with me, and I will pay you." And he refused and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt. When his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed. Understatement. And they went and reported it to their master, all that had taken place. And his master summoned him and said, "You wicked servant, I forgave you all the debt that because you had pleaded with me. And should you not have mercy with your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he could pay all of his debt. Another one of those verses we often take out of context. If you go back to verse 1, this is a response to the same question. Who is the greatest in the kingdom? Because the parallel is what? What debt has been forgiven for us? Could we have paid it? Absolutely not. Jesus Christ paid the debt of sin that we could not pay. Because of Him, we can stand before God guiltless. And yet, how often do we go out and for over nothing get mad at our brother and demand that they make retribution? When in the same case, we are no different than this servant. And in verse 35, he said, "So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart." So ultimately, are we childlike in our thoughts and heart and in our actions? Isn't it really odd that the world is constantly telling us to grow up when God says, be like a little child? Have you thought about how many of the fruits of the Spirit that are mentioned in Galatians 5 are exactly what little children are? Love, joy, peace, kindness, goodness, gentleness. Patience and self-control they have to learn. And I'm still working on them myself, so I can't say anything about that. But aren't those the traits we find in children? I often need to check this list myself to see how many of them I've lost. The world we live in is so good at taking them away from us. At work, when they get on your case about something that you think is trivial. On the road, when somebody cuts in front of you, when somebody pulls into traffic and you're 15 seconds later than you might have been before they cut in front of you, how much peace and joy and goodness and kindness are you having in your heart? Or just because today is Super Bowl Sunday, and I'm going to put a reference in there, when the referee makes a call that you disagree with about a game that's absolutely meaningless in the overall scheme of life, how many millions of people are going to be staring at their screens, screaming at the top of their lungs about how bad that call was, when they couldn't see it as well, nor do they know the rules as well as the gentleman who was there that made the call? And even if he's wrong, he's right, because that's his job, not yours. Children learn to be ungodly by watching grown-ups. All of those around. Parents, your children will not have the same fervor and desire for anything you have until it becomes something they want for themselves. For them to want it, they have to see it and experience it. First, it must be desirable. How can they desire what they don't see? How can they want what they don't experience? In the version that I use, the ESV, I found that the reference to the children of God in the New Testament 9 times. Oddly, that same reference was not used anywhere else in the Bible. The Old Testament, they're not called the children of God. They're called the children of Israel. We have something they never had. We truly can be the children of God. We are His children, and He loves for us, and He wants to care for us, and He wants the best for us. The question is, are we obedient children or wayward children? If you'd like to become a child of God or need a closer relationship with God, your Father, or just need to become more childlike in your life, in your heart, please come now as we stand. Bring
my soul, broken mind. Oh, my sin. said,
"Hi there, buddy. It's good to see y'all. It's pretty funny sometimes when you realize that, hey, here the guys doing the announcements. Luckily, Jeff came by and told me, he goes, hey, Jim, because I hope you know you're doing the announcements today. Little did I know I was doing the announcements today. So I was so glad that he even told me, because I might have pulled a Jeff and was like, well, I can't believe that person's like, no. You know? So I'm glad he saved me on that one. But, yes, we do have a couple announcements today. Obviously, still have some of the prayer list that we can keep looking over and praying for, to make sure that we're doing that as best we can, because that's why I know that they're asking for it. So if we can do that small, even just taking and just reading and letting God know that they're on our list, not that He doesn't already know, but that we are at least concerned enough to say them in our own prayers. Also, as you can see, we're in a little bit of remodeling. I am very impressed that there's already so much done. I don't know who that is, but I'm sure Dave was a part of it. So I appreciate all of y'all that are doing the primary work.
Betsy and Don did all of it.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And Matt.
See, I asked him earlier. He said, no, I didn't do it. He's such a good fellow. Anyway. Yes. Also, I've also heard some good news that the Bunko night went really well. I heard that there's several winners of different categories. But the Kim was the champion, which I knew that belt, that was amazing, right? It looks like one of Jim's old WWF ones, but it's a jewel. Anyway, so I went that one well. Also, it seems that some of the guys are planning on having guys night out, probably, obviously, possibly the same days as Bunko. I don't know. Does that make sense? Maybe not. No? Okay. Well, if you need any further information, I obviously just got some on that. Also, basketball games. What?
I did put
that's the reason they're getting some problems from the Hindu population. They probably have some pressure to get them out of the place that they're meeting at. So keep your prayers going for them.
So you have an announcement?
It's the launch of the work night.
Yeah. So you can speak with the last so people would know. I'm glad you all got them back. We do have food. So that's in the back, so y'all can stay. Obviously, we have a few guests today. I'm pretty glad to see y'all there. Not only because it's work day, but because we also get to enjoy you. But if you do want to stay for painting, you can. If not, that's perfectly fine. But just the more the better. But we do have a lot of painting, obviously, that we're going to be doing to kind of give our church a facelift, so to say. So if you want to stick around for that, we'll be here for a while. And then we're going to have leftovers for the Super Bowl and all that good stuff. So hopefully I get everything and it's good. Okay. So let's go get a break.